This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Ayman. For our next story, we're taking a deep dive into child marriage in Malaysia. The Women, Family and Community Development Ministry said that almost 15,000 child marriages were recorded between 2007 and 2017. While a large proportion of these marriages were recorded among the Muslim community in Malaysia, there were also thousands of cases which involved non-Muslim marriages. And most child marriages are between teens, with some outliers involving a child and an older adult. To explore the issue of child marriages in Malaysia, Voice of the Children produced a documentary which looked at the status and impact of child marriages on women and communities in Malaysia. Joining us in the studio today is Sharmila Sekaran, chairperson of Voice of the Children. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Now, could you go into further detail as to why Voice of the Children set out to make this documentary?
Right. So this documentary has been a long time in incubation, 3 years to be exact. And the reason why we produced it was because there was a lot of conversation around the issue of child marriage. But we felt that the child's voice was not coming through. We were hearing from activists, from politicians, from a whole variety of adults. But we weren't able to hear from children or children who were being impacted by child marriage. And that's what we set out to do, to try and bring the child's voice out into the fore, so to speak, so that we can then have a meaningful discussion around it.
So, besides the children, who else did you speak to for the documentary?
So we spoke to particularly two children. One person is no longer a child. Mm-hmm. The other one still is a child. But regardless, the girl who's no longer a child was married for the first time when she was still in her teens. So she was still a child at the time of marriage. And now, in her early 20s, she's onto her third marriage. With, you know, children and so forth. We also spoke to other activists, social activists, a doctor who is involved in the rescue of children who are being put up for marriage.
How willing were the children and their family members to participate in the documentary?
Really good question. It was very, very hard to get the voice of the child out, you know, our subject matters. Getting the child to understand what it is that we're trying to get from them, what we want them to voice out, trying to get a child who was willing to put herself in this position and understand the circumstances around it. And of course, for us to gain the trust. You know, you can't just parachute in and say, I want you to do this, because then we're putting words in their mouth. Mm. So we needed to hear their story, spend time with them, get them to tell us a story, get them to understand what we were trying to do, and agree to it. And of course, you're right, the community, the parents, also to agree, which is why it took us so long, because that was the hardest thing, to get the voice of the child, so to speak.
I guess if in that process of trying to convince them to speak, what were some of their concerns?
A couple of things. One, you know, I think they weren't sure how this was going to be used. And also just general reticence about speaking out. Some of them just were not aware of what was happening. And the most important thing actually is, although you speak to people about the fact that they have come into contact with child marriages, when we started out and we wanted to interview children, we were not able to be put in touch. So either the parents or guardians blocked it for their own specific reasons, or we just weren't able to connect with those children. We also went and spent seriously every day of a week sitting in the Sharacots, for example, just wanting to see and understand the way the process works, because, you know, you hear a lot of stuff. And we have heard a lot of things anecdotally. For example, yeah, you just turn up and everything is rubber stamped. Mm. Well, we wanted to see it and record it, you know, rather than just have people like me speak about it. And then we weren't able to get those children. So we're not sure exactly where they are. But I think that's one of the key things, that when we look at the data that we have, the statistics that come out, the numbers are comparatively small. You're talking about, what, something like 5,000 to 7,000 children over a space of 5 years. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at those kinds of figures, then it's comparatively or relatively small. The question is, how many of these marriages are actually being registered in Malaysia? So if I take us back to that situation of the 40-year-old man and the 11-year-old girl in Kelantan, they went and got married in Thailand. So that would not be a Sharia court registration. So while a marriage had happened, took place, it's not registered in Malaysia. So how many more of these are happening in the border states? And the other thing is, how much of it is being kept, like they're getting married customarily, so it's being kept under wraps until they're able to go and have the marriage registered. And this is for the non-Muslims. So these are some of the things which we were not able to, we're aware is happening, but we are not able to actually go and record or document in the documentary.
So can you tell us a bit about the sort of the demographics of the people involved in child marriages? Because there's this notion that it occurs predominantly among the Muslim communities. Is this something that you found to be true during the process of making the documentary?
So there are two issues there. Yes, in actual numbers, there are more Muslim children getting married than in actual numbers of non-Muslim children. But when you think of the fact that there are more Muslims in the country than non-Muslims.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you do a comparison of the population, then it's almost equal in terms of the numbers. So that's one of the things we're hoping that we will debunk, the fact that it is not a certain race or religion or community, that we need to know exactly where these marriages are happening. How many marriages are happening in Petaling Jaya, say, for example, or in Bandar Utama around or Taman Tun versus other parts of Selangor, where we don't have these kinds of figures. But what is clear is that all the communities that we went in to try and speak to, and also the communities that we, or the people we actually did document and speak to, there are certain commonalities, and poverty is one of them. Lack of opportunities resulting from poverty, and therefore lack of hope and a future, was one of the key issues around these early marriages, child marriages.
So we're going to dive into some of those factors a bit more slightly later. And I guess I just wanted to figure out why those numbers aren't necessarily available, you know, the state-by-state numbers where it happens the most or where it happens the least. Is it just lack of data transparency from the government?
Absolutely, it is. There are a couple of reasons. One, the fact is registration of marriage for non-Muslims is in the hand of KDN, which is under Home Affairs, the Ministry of Home Affairs. So they have a record of that data. And then at the other end, the Sharia courts have a record of the data of the Muslim marriages, Muslim child marriages. So it's very hard to get the data. There's no one central point that you can go to and look at the data and then decide what you want to do with that data. So a lot of people, like, for example, when the issue came up of that 40-year-old man with the 11-year-old girl in Kelantan, everyone was pointing a finger at the Ministry of Women. What are they doing? Why don't they have this information? What are they doing about it? Well, the fact is they never had the information. They have to get it from another ministry. And if that other ministry does not think this kind of data is important because they're looking at security issues, which is placed at a far higher level than child marriages. 5,000 or you know, 2,000 non-Muslim marriages, what's that compared to security issues? So you're not going to get the kind of information that you need. Similarly, for the Muslim marriages through the Sharia court, again, Ministry of Women have to go to the Sharia court. And then we have to remember that under the Sharia system, it's state-led. It's not, there's no federal registry for Muslim marriages. Everything is at the state level. So if you want to know, get data on Muslim child marriages, you need to go to each and every state to get the data. And again, if it's not important or it's not seen as being a key issue, then the data is not going to be collected or collected in a meaningful way that we can utilize.
We're speaking today to Shamila Sekharan, Voice of the Children's Chairperson. If you have any thoughts, you can send it to us. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after this for more. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Ayman. We're speaking today to Sharmila Sekharan, Chairperson of Voice of the Children. They recently made a documentary about child marriages in Malaysia. And Earlier, we were talking about why and how the documentary was put together. Before we get on, we would like to hear from you. If you have any thoughts or messages, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, we'd like to talk about the subject of child marriage itself and the communities in which child marriages happen. When we think about the religions or groups that I suppose condone child marriage, we assume that everyone is on board. What is it like in reality? Is child marriage a given or a norm within these communities?
No, but I think a lot of times the children feel they have no choice. They don't know what their options are. They don't think they have other options. And they don't have anyone else to turn to. They don't know who they can turn to get support from to block these marriages. For example, one of the girls that we interview comes out in the documentary. She was rescued from an impending child marriage. She was 11 and she was rescued before that happened. But she says that her sister went through a child marriage. Her sister was a very young bride, a child bride. The person the sister married was not that much older. So that's another thing that we need to debunk, that not all child marriages involve a very young child and a very old man. And also the fact that there are teenage boys who are marrying adult women, mm-hmm. women who are older to them. But invariably, those women are in their 20s or 30s. So it, again, it's not your standard thought process of, oh, the 11-year-old with the 40-year-old. You know, that is not that common. They're more similar age. That's one factor. So this girl says that she doesn't want to go through what her sister went through, her older sister went through. And she talks about the older sister being abused by the husband. The sister's husband. Similarly, with the Orang Asli girl that we interviewed, she said, well, you know, it's not the best thing to happen to someone. And some of the other children we interviewed who didn't want to go on record, but certainly it formed very much the voice that we were hearing from the children themselves, was the fact that not the best thing for a child, try to avoid it if you can. I was not happy or I'm not happy in this situation. And what we always tried to do in terms of speaking to the children that we spoke to and the families or the community was we did not want to put words in people's mouth. Mm. And that was something that the filmmaker and Voice of the Children collectively, you know, all of us on the board as the committee, were very, very clear about that regardless of our personal position on this, this had to have integrity. This documentary had to have integrity. Which means it could not be words we put into someone's mouth. It has to be words that come out, their own emotions and all that coming out in their words, which is why it required a lot of time to get to know them first and spend time with the families and communities.
It sounds like a lot of the child marriages are sort of initiated by the parents, is it?
I mean, absolutely.
How do they decide when the child is ready for these marriages?
Going along with the poverty is lack of opportunity. Lack of opportunity for education, lack of opportunity for meaningful work. So when that happens and a child comes of age, very often they drop out of secondary school, high school, right? And invariably for the girl, there's very little else for them to do. So the most obvious thing is what happens in nature, which is you start procreation. Except for us, I'm talking about Malaysia, you can't have procreation without the sanctity of marriage. Mm-hmm. And so we say, well, if you're going to go off and have relationships with people, then you need to be married first. With the Orang Asli people, there is no such thing as dating. So the minute a boy and a girl start kind of hanging out together, even going to the cafe like the mama shop for teh tarik kind of thing, immediately the parents are like, there's no dating in our community. You have to get married. So if you like this boy, you marry him. If you speak to a lot of urban, more middle-income or well-off people, they have an idea of the kind of person they want to marry. A girl will have an idea of the kind of man she wants to marry. A boy will have an idea of the kind of girl he would like to marry. With them, there doesn't seem to be this concept of, I can actually choose different partners and what I want. Like, I want someone who's a professional, for example, or I want someone who is musically inclined, or I want someone who makes me laugh and makes me happy. You know, they don't have this concept. They're just willing to kind of, I bumped into him, he's all right, I like him, and then they hang out and And then the parents get them married, which is why there's so much divorce going on in these communities. Like I said, orang asli girl onto a third marriage. And then the other test is, of course, when you don't have to think about education, tertiary or vocational, then it's just a case of, can you look after your family? So with the orang asli, it's, can you cut down a tree? Can you build a house? Can you use a blowpipe or whatever it is to bring home food, fish, and whatever? And this is something that children are following, little boys are following their fathers into the jungle from a young age. So as long as you're able to do that, 12, 13, 15, you're ready to get married. With the Muslim community, one of the things that we discovered in, you know, talking to also the Sharikot personnel and families and children is, are they able to bring the child of this union, of this early marriage, in the Islamic faith? So do you know and understand the Quran? Can you teach your child the Quran? So you have to remember now that children are going for Quran reading lessons from a very young age, 5, 6, whatever. So to mengaji Quran is something that a 10-year-old is very comfortable doing, or an 11-year-old has it down pat. They're taking part in Quran reading competitions. So they're ready to get married if that is your test. So if you think of that 11-year-old girl in Kelantan, she had already dropped out of school, primary school. She was not going to school even at the age of 11. She was loitering around, hanging around, and had come into contact with this man who was kind of associating with her family, her parents. He was willing to look after her. He's a stranger. How does he look after a little girl? Well, people like us will say, well, you just be a benefactor. You give the family money, right? But in a society where they think, well, what else is this girl going to do? Then they just say, well, you take her and look after her by marrying her. And when you don't have other options and you don't know of other options, because these parents are illiterate as well, right? A lot of them. So that is where the work needs to be done, going into these communities and teaching and showing parents, community leaders, that there are options. Getting your child married should not be your first option and is certainly not your only option.
And what if, you know, the girl or the boy, you know, you earlier said they basically had no option, but what if they objected to the marriage? What happens there?
You know, this is it, that even all of us in the urban world and educated world, we are all kind of like indoctrinated and trained to be obedient to authority, more so in a lot of these poorer communities, because when you're disobedient to your parents, they tell you, whether it's the Muslim community or the Hindu community or whatever, if you don't listen to your parents, you're going against God's wishes, you know, because your parents have been put here as your guardians, kind of thing. There is no concept. It's happening with millennials in urban areas who are exposed to TV and all that kind of stuff, where they're a lot more vocal about their rights. But in the more rural or impoverished communities, everyone just goes with the flow. Very few people are willing to make that stand. You do get one or two, but by and large, they don't know they can make a stand against it. And if they make a stand against it, then what? For the orang asli, you could, in a worst-case scenario, get buang from the kampung, get thrown out of the kampung. That's a worst-case scenario if you're really difficult. And you have to remember, that's the only community they know. They don't know anything else. This is their only culture and way of life and all that. So a lot of them are school dropouts because they don't do well in the formal education sector. But for a lot of the communities, vocational schools are far away. They're not accessible. So for them to remain in the kampung and go to school and come back is almost impossible. And because there is a general lack of, within the community, that education is important, whether it's tertiary or vocational, education is important. It's the way out for the family from poverty. It's the way out for you from poverty. It's going to give you and your family and your children greater opportunities. There's none of this narrative happening in a lot of these communities. So it's very much subsistence. So that's the thing that, for me, was the take home, really, that we need to tell them that there are opportunities and let them pick which opportunities they would want to pick and help them along that path.
We're speaking today to Shamla Sekaran of Voice of the Children. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Balming frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Kelvin and Ayman. We're speaking today to Sharmila Sekarin, chairperson of Voice of the Children, who is here to talk about a documentary that the NGO produced called Stolen Futures, Child Marriage in Malaysia. Send us your thoughts and questions. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Before the news, we spoke about the circumstances that lead to child marriage, including the lack of agency that children have to speak up when they're placed in such situations. Sharmila, I'm so curious to look at it from the lens of the family members. For the documentary, you did speak to family members of the children who were married off. What were their hopes and reasons for agreeing to marry a family member off at such a young age?
For a lot of them, they would have gone through the same process of being married off early. There is no inhibition to being married and divorced. It's not seen as being a negative thing to be a divorced person within the community. You just marry the next person that comes along. But it is important for girls in particular among these communities to have a protector. And protectors are always male. So from your father to your husband. And if your husband doesn't work out, you find another husband. But that is the mission for them, to continue life in this manner. Like I said, until we show them that there is something different outside, change is not going to happen. The little girl that we spoke to, the one who was saved from a marriage, was very clear about wanting to become a doctor. She had a dream, but because of the circumstances she found herself in, and a lot of this is to do with parents not knowing how to manage their responsibilities with regards to their daughters and their children. So children are often seen sometimes, they didn't say this, this is my word and my interpretation of what I'm hearing, a little bit of a burden, if you like, because you always have to look after them, you always have to care for them. Mm. So if we go back to that, again, the Kelantan story, here's an 11-year-old girl. For this man to look after her, she had to go with him, which means marriage. It also means the parents didn't have to provide for her. And when parents don't have money or have a lot of children, then the easiest or most obvious thing to do is to pass that responsibility off to someone else, whoever it is. And if the person seems decent enough, like this chap, they've been dealing with him in their work or whatever, you know, for their living. For some years, he seems a decent enough person. Well, I'm sure he won't be cruel to our daughter, so we'll let him marry her. So there is that kind of thing happening. Also, very, very high in the parents' psyche or thought process is the fact that, like I said, a lot of the marriages are happening among similar age. Like I said, 40-year-old, 11-year-old is...
Those are rare cases.
Those are rare cases. They're not common. Most of the cases are among similar age. And again, they would rather... relationships develop within the boundaries of a formal relationship, a marriage, rather than outside of that, because then it's seen as being an unhealthy relationship. Regardless, again, it's not a Muslim-only issue. The Hindus also feel the same thing. So what they tend to do that we are discovering, we were trying to interview a non-Muslim child as well, but we weren't able to get to them because it's an offense.
Right.
Right.
And that tends to be driven underground.
Exactly. So we've encountered, but in getting them to come onto the documentary and be recorded, we were not able to get that because they are going through the customary marriages and then waiting until the law reform age, the Marriage and Divorce Act age, to register the marriage, to legalize it, so to speak.
So you've spoken about some of the reasons behind child marriage. There's poverty, there's a lack of a dating culture, and they want to shift the responsibility to their new husband. So after getting married, do the children or even the parents find that getting them married off was the right solution or was the right thing to do?
So most of them say no. Mm-hmm. The most of them that we spoke to said not the best thing. But then it's something, so unless you're going to break culture, break out of the norm, they still go along with it. So the mothers that we spoke to, so these are adult women. We didn't really record them, but these were adult women because we wanted the child's voice to come out more, were married young as well, as children or teenagers, right? And they were like, oh, you know, our life is not great and I did not have a great marriage and blah, blah, blah. then why do you let your child get married? Well, what else is my child going to do? She may as well get married and start a family, because what else is she going to do? So while they don't think, yay, this is the best thing that happened, and therefore I want the same for my child, their option issue, what else is my child going to do, was very much a voice or a line of thought or articulation that came out.
So something I kind of picked up from this conversation is that there is this continuous cycle of, I guess, generating poor parenting skills, right? If you become a parent, if you become a bride or a groom at such a young age, and you might not necessarily have the time to develop those skills, and you end up also being part of the whole cycle once again, you know, you inevitably perpetuate child marriage. Is that something that is you observe as well?
Definitely. Mm. So as an example, I've spoken to some of my nephews and nieces who are, they come from a family where the parents are professionals. They've come from families where education is important. And I speak to them about getting married. My nephew, who's 12, I said to him, oh, do you have a girlfriend? And, you know, I was teasing him. And he very, very seriously, very in a most mature tone of voice, said to me, Auntie Shamla, I'm too young to be thinking about all these things. I have to have an education first. You know, you speak to one of the children from these other communities, you know, the more impoverished communities, do you have a boyfriend? Aditaman. Or do you have a girlfriend or whatever? You know, they're already thinking along the lines of, because that's what they see in their parents. That's what they see all around them, the community. A lot of the people who have managed to leave the community and do reasonably well, as in come into the desa, into the cities, and this is what we're hoping that will come out of this documentary, they are not going back and being a voice to say there is something else out there. There is something else you guys can be focusing on and thinking about. So while my nephew is thinking about, I need to go to university, so I can't be dealing with girls right now, these other children are thinking, I can't wait to get married. I can't wait to have a relationship with another person.
And on that note, how are child brides and grooms viewed and treated by society? Do they experience any sort of stigma? You know, are they somewhat, you know, taken away from society and they only experience a social world where it's only their spouse and their family members?
In certain cases, yes. In a lot of the cases where they live within the community, it is kind of more accepted and, you know, there is no social stigma. But what is very clear is that they remain trapped in the poverty cycle. What is also clear is that there are high rates of divorce among these communities, which then, of course, perpetuate the problematic parenting skills, because you've got a whole bunch of children not growing up with both parents, not seeing a wholesome, healthy relationship between a husband and wife. So all this is stuff that they're learning and is they're seeing all around them. So that is what they are exposed to and what they grow up thinking and knowing as the norm, which means they're going to fall into the same trap unless someone tells them, actually, you can have a healthy relationship with another person. A lot of them also, if they leave their community and go into a different community, they go to the husband's community, a lot of the girls invariably do end up being abused. A lot of it is physical abuse, but there's also sexual abuse, and they are very often left to fend for themselves and their offspring without the husband and support of his family. So there is a lot of that, which again perpetuates your poverty cycle. So there's a lot of that happening as well.
We're speaking to Shamla Sekaran, chairperson of Voice of the Children, about a documentary they produced called Stolen Futures, Child Marriage in Malaysia. You can send in your messages to us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Kelvin and Ayman. We have with us Shamla Sekaran, chairperson of Voice of the Children. We've been speaking about the documentary that Voice of the Children produced about child marriage in Malaysia. Shamla, as you mentioned, last year, a 41-year-old man from Kelantan was found to have married an 11-year-old girl from Thailand. There was huge uproar and a lot of media attention and pressure on the government to take action or introduce some law reforms. But how much change or awareness did that case bring within communities that practice child marriage?
almost a negligible amount. Remember, straight soon after that case, I think a month or two later, there was a very similar case in Trengganu as well,
yes,
which did not receive the same amount of uproar among society as the Kelantan issue. Why? Because we all forget and we move on. So while last year there was a lot said and done about child marriage, civil society and Voice of the Children was part of that. We had a movement and we went to Parliament to present petitions and, you know, there was all that happening. And then the government came out and said, okay, we're going to amend the laws. And now silence. Nothing has happened since then. There hasn't been, you know, there's been lack of inertia, really, and energy in moving things forward. And this happens, it's cyclical. So if we go back and do research on this issue, we'll see that, yeah, similar thing happened when that 40-year-old man married the 13-year-old girl in Sabah. Mm. We're constantly hearing these stories periodically, and then we all get worked up and upset. But then very little is done, very little movement. And that's what we're hoping to do. One of the things we want to try and do with this documentary is go and show this documentary to, in particular, the people that we interviewed, the children and the communities, and to start with them. And we're really hoping that with time, other people, other communities, civil society, members of parliament, the media will be able to pick up on the documentary and use it as a basis to have meaningful discussions around it. So, you know, we hear from politicians, oh, you know, this girl was anyway kind of, you know, having relationships with men, so let her get married to him. It's okay. You know, so they justify it. They kind of correct a wrong by doing another wrong, and then they justify it. So we're hoping that with this video, we can go into the communities and speak to them and let them hear that their own children are not happy. And then hopefully encourage the communities to speak within the community with the children, with the parents, with the village head, you know, and have that discussion, because that's where the real change will happen.
So I just wanted to, I guess, you know, and that's surprising to me, right? Just trying to think about the hold-ups and as to why politicians seem a bit slow in moving this forward. And you mentioned it's just also a mindset thing that the politicians seem to have. But is it also possibly because some politicians might see trying to back this move as one that is political suicide?
Possibly. I have to say that I was very heartened to hear in June, I was not able to go. It was either end of June, early July, I forget. I think early July. Sabah had a workshop, they brought stakeholders together and had a meaningful discussion. I've not seen the full results of what happened in that session. I think it was 2 or 3 days of it. And they brought in, like I said, brought in experts, they brought in communities. And they really want to, I think, from what I understood, get to the root of this issue. So I think, yes, a lot of people, unfortunately, are looking at it as a religious issue. Because when we talk, all the issues that come to light are involving Muslim people and Muslim children. And unfortunately, even for civil society, our angle is responding to the claim that the Prophet married young and therefore it's okay. And one of the statements I made at the time was that there is nothing in any religious text, not even in the Quran, which says thou shalt marry young. It's not mandatory. And of course, the issue of the Prophet marrying young can be unpackaged. And some people say, well, she wasn't that young and all that kind of thing. And he never really married her. He was just kind of betrothed to her, which is an engagement. You know, so there's all this going around. But I think by engaging in that issue, we're not actually addressing the core issue, which is, why is it happening in this country? Why are politicians not marrying off their 13-year-old children, sons and daughters? Why are they saying it's okay for a village child to be married off early? You know, so if you're saying that it's wajib, so to speak, that it's mandatory, then it doesn't make sense, you know? So for them, a lot of it is to do with the fact that... So I think you're right. I think they're approaching it from the wrong angle, which is why they may think it may be political suicide in terms of the Muslim or the Malay vote. But I think if they change the narrative and the advocacy around it, it ceases to be, like I said, it ceases to be a religious issue. And when you look at the statistics, you're having almost equal number of Muslim children and non-Muslim children if you look at the demographics of the nation, you know?
So how do you move the conversation beyond religion then? Because like you suggested just now, a lot of it is coloured by religious sensitivities and all that. So How do you move the conversation forward without relating it to religion and without it being diverted with religious sensitivities?
So there are two things. One, Malaysia is a religious nation. You know, a lot of what we think and speak and say does hark back to whatever religion you come from, and in particular Islam, because that's the majority community. So I think it's